We're chatting with Dr. Simon Thatcher, the travel health doctor at Health HQ in Southport. Welcome, Simon. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Rice. It is nice to be here.
It's probably an appropriate time with the travel industry having been at some sort of turmoil, held into hiatus by, in fact, a health pandemic, with things coming back to life again, to renew our association with travelling health.
That is true, Russ. We are very busy at the moment. So there's this pent-up demand of people who have been planning holidays now for years, and they're all trying to go away at the moment. So it is very, very busy.
Can we just discuss some aspects that, for example, I'm about to take off someplace. Do I need to see a doctor?
That depends a little. If you're going to a safe country like the United States or the United Kingdom or something, perhaps not. But most less developed countries, it is a good idea to see the doctor because there are diseases that we can prevent with either vaccinations or medications, and some of those diseases can be fatal. It is compulsory to receive yellow fever vaccine if you're going to Africa or South America. So that's the one where you really have to see someone like a travel health doctor. But we're also up to date with all of the other vaccinations and information you need to travel as well.
It appears that travel no longer is as simple as maybe we thought it was before because of different restrictions and controls and requirements from various parts of the world.
Well, that used to be true, but over the last 4 weeks, a lot of countries are removing their requirements for sort of pre-testing for COVID to travel to those countries. So it is getting easier and easier to get between countries. You just have to have your certificate if you've had the vaccinations.
Well, supposing then we've decided to take a trip, how far out prior to departure should we consult a health doctor?
For most common sort of tourist trips, for up to sort of 4 weeks visiting less developed countries, we need about 4 weeks to be able to ensure that vaccines are effective before you go and in case we need to do any blood tests or anything like that. If a family is planning to move overseas for years with young children, then it's more like 3 months, but 3 or 4 weeks in general for most trips.
You might just outline for us again those vaccines that are compulsory.
Well, the compulsory one that people have always had to see travel health doctors about is the yellow fever vaccination because you need that to get between certain countries overseas. A lot of people believe that they also need it to get back to Australia, but that's not quite true. If you come back to Australia, you will be held up in customs and have to talk to a customs officer, and they describe the symptoms of yellow fever to you. But in fact, Australians are not prevented from re-entering Australia without the certificate. It's more that traveling between countries overseas, you just have to have it. And then, of course, there is the COVID vaccination issue, which is changing every week. And so you just have to keep your ear to the ground and check each country you're visiting to see what their current requirements are for the COVID vaccination. One problem is in young children, where every country has different rules. Some countries require six-year-olds to have COVID vaccines, some it's 10, some it's 12, and some it's 18 years. So if your children are unvaccinated, this can create problems because they have to get pre-departure testing in each country they visit. So you do need to, if you've got young children who have not had COVID vaccines, check up the rules pretty carefully.
And where indeed would one find out that information?
Well, the main site in Australia is the Smart Traveller site, which is run by the federal government, and they will then also point to each country you might visit so you can look up their rules and regulations about things like COVID vaccinations. But the Smart Traveller site is a good place to start.
Speaking about children, you say that in some instances COVID vaccinations are necessary. What are other vaccinations that particularly apply to the young'uns?
The most common vaccines for all travellers are the basic ones, which is tetanus, typhoid, hepatitis A and hepatitis B. But all children in Australia are vaccinated against tetanus and hepatitis B, so it's often just one vaccination for hepatitis A and typhoid. Parents are more likely to need hepatitis B vaccines because they did not receive those as childhood. And that's the basic sort of travel vaccine because those are the two food and water diseases that can make people sick for months or even occasionally put people in hospital and become seriously unwell.
We've talked about the compulsory vaccinations. Now, supposing we just want to be extra careful, are there sort of voluntary vaccinations one can undertake?
as I was describing, the Hep A and typhoid are the essential ones, I guess we would say, in terms of the optional vaccinations. And then other vaccinations depend how far you are off the beaten track and how long you are living in overseas countries. And that would include things like rabies shots, particularly for children where they may be interacting with dogs or monkeys or something like that. We have had the recent outbreak of Japanese encephalitis in the piggeries in Australia, and that is a rural mosquito disease in Southeast Asia. And again, if families are planning to spend months travelling in those sort of areas, that disease is more dangerous in children, although it can also be very dangerous in adults. And those are the sort of basic things we would describe with a family. The much less commonly needed one or that we need to discuss is tuberculosis vaccine in children if they are going to be spending prolonged periods in contact with locals. And BCG, which is the vaccine for tuberculosis, has to be given 3 months before travel. And that's why I've said that the families who are planning long trips need to see us a bit earlier if they are worried about those sort of problems.
Are there occasions where it's necessary to have multiple vaccinations?
Absolutely. If people come to us and they're planning a long trip overseas and they're leaving in 3 weeks, the most we have given in one day is six, I think.
Wow.
But three or four is not uncommon. If they're not up to date with things like tetanus and Hep B, then they need Hep A and typhoid and may want to start rabies shots. So, yeah, there's no real limit to how many vaccines you can give in one day, in fact.
And largely this would be due to sort of your prior knowledge of some of the places in the globe that require these things, probably information not readily available to the ordinary traveller.
That is true. I have been doing this for 20 years and I subscribe to websites and chat groups that give up-to-date information about disease outbreaks, and you have to be doing travel medicine all the time to keep up with a lot of those sort of bits of information that you're only going to be sent occasionally and not are going to be in the normal media sort of thing. So, yeah, it does take a bit of effort to keep up to date with all the disease outbreaks around the world that people are going to be travelling to those places.
We've discussed the prospect of encountering people who may infect us with viruses and the like, but I understand that the mosquito is man's worst enemy.
That is absolutely true. Mosquitoes have killed more humans than any other insect. And so there are several diseases. You have the daytime ones like dengue fever, which we unfortunately don't have a vaccine for. And so we would discuss repellents, strong repellents for people traveling rurally because they last longer. And then the nighttime disease is malaria, which still unfortunately occasionally kills travelers. As well as using repellents and mosquito nets, we would then discuss malaria tablets, which give extra protection on top of using prevention. And then there's the rare diseases like Japanese encephalitis I was talking about before. If people are spending long periods in rural areas of Southeast Asia, rare but very deadly disease we discuss from the mosquitoes.
We've become, I suppose, more acutely aware of the existence of and the need for vaccines against viruses and what have you in recent times. And Australians have in the past had a reputation for a certain degree of bravado or lack of real concern about things. Has that heightened now since the COVID scare and a need to call on someone like you for your services?
Yeah, I guess so. Australians certainly have a reputation for travelling to every country in the world, and there's nowhere you go that you won't meet Australians and are prepared to do quite long trips off the beaten track. And we really do want to see those people because they're at much higher risk of acquiring quite nasty infections and diseases overseas. But unfortunately, they're often the group who doesn't visit doctors because, as you said, they're young, healthy, think they don't have anything to worry about and perceive it as a sort of wasting money or something. But if you get a disease that makes you sick for 3 months on your holiday, then we're going to say that vaccine is actually very good value for money.
Of course, people, when they plan their itinerary, that's the stage where they have to become aware, I suppose, of some of the places they're going to and the unique problems that might arise there. And that's where services such as yours provide would be necessary.
That is exactly what we're hoping, Russ, and that's why we keep up to date with all that information. And there's reports coming out every day in each country of what disease outbreaks or even other problems like social unrest, like riots, where to keep away from, which borders you don't visit in countries. So there are other physical issues about travelling between countries. It's not all about diseases and vaccinations, and we try to keep up to date with all of that, yes.
Can you, you mentioned a subject as we were passing through the conversation about the expense factor. Is it a hefty impost to undertake vaccinations?
It is not covered by the government under the PBS scheme, so you don't get vaccines on the PBS. So yes, there is a cost there. People with private health insurance and extras cover will get some of that money back, but the younger travellers are not likely to have that level of health care. And certainly that sometimes becomes an issue if you are recommending six different vaccinations and that cost is going to be well over $1,000, that sometimes you have to prioritise which is the most important and which ones perhaps can be left out with extra advice on how to prevent or avoid those diseases, or just know what to do if you think you've been exposed and have to get to medical care urgently. But for a family of four and a long trip overseas, it can mount up to several thousand dollars sometimes, that is true.
Just before we wrap up, can we ask you then to offer your considered advice to someone who is intending to travel in the near future?
Well, you've got to keep up to date with all the information online about each country you're visiting, because it is honestly at the moment changing from week to week in a lot of countries, particularly about the COVID sort of rules and things. And then if you travel a lot, many of the vaccinations we give last for long periods, like 10 years or sometimes for life. So something that initially may seem expensive, but if it is counted as a cost over 10 trips you might do over the next 10 years, actually can become very cheap. It's just that there is an upfront cost and you have to plan a bit around that you have enough money to afford both the trip and maybe getting the necessary vaccinations, malaria tablets and other medical advice that you will need for that trip.
Thanks for being with us today. We've been talking with Dr. Simon Thatcher, the travel health doctor at Health HQ in Southport.
Thank you, Russ. It has been a pleasure.